Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the happy hour? Friday edition. See, I'm happy. It's almost the weekend.
Are you sure?
The working stiff, working for the weekend. We all look forward to the weekend, right? Some live for the weekend, guys like you. But I'm making a point. I'll get to a point. First and foremost, we got the hardest working guy in legal advisement, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. And he also is the host of Morning Cannolis every Saturday morning right here on the Civic Media Network. Jim, 9 to 11 tomorrow, but more importantly, 5:30 on the Devil's Advocates today. People are like Farouk Assault. I want Jim Santel now. And
I
cannolis.
Want Jim now. We got to wait a half hour. He'll be here.
You know, I got the guy's pizza here at the shop in Madison today. Good pizza. I like good, you know, local pizza, not one of the big national chains. And I said, you got desserty kind of stuff? And she had two things. One was like some little donut-y kind of things. I didn't know what they were. Cinnamon donuts. And I'm like, someone's got donuts in the break room. And the other thing she had was cannolis.
Oh, yeah.
I said, leave the cannolis. Jim Santel joins us at 5:30. But, Dom, here is what I want to talk about. And then the phones, 844-967-2789. I'm like, you know, we got to take callers sooner this hour. We will take callers sooner than normal. But you see the good news today, and we've got a couple of bites from Joe Biden on this. The jobs report. Jobs report exceeded expectations. Again, right? 263,000 jobs. And what was the result on Wall Street? How'd the markets react to a strong labor force? It went down. It went down. The markets didn't like that because the markets see a strong labor force. You know, if you think of the pendulum, like who's stronger right now? Let's say labor has the upper hand right now. Well, A, that's bad for corporate bottom line. That's bad for the Dow. And B, probably means they're going to continue to raise interest rates. Now, the Fed has taken some recent statements to indicate that maybe they're going to slow down the rapid increase of interest rates. But here's what I would point out, Don. The other topic we talked about a lot in yesterday's show and earlier on the show, the rail strike averted by an act of the government. But I'm going to try to tie these two thoughts together just for a minute, Don, then to the phones, 844-967-2789, your grievances, the Friday sort. Welcome here. Raising interest rates really squeezes primarily the consumer. You don't stop hiring. If you're a company and you've got profitability and you need to take on more staff, you continue to try and hire if it allows you to increase your profitability, right? So that's not going to change your trajectory of hiring. But in terms of consumer spending, this massive raise, interest rates now are over 6% on home loans. It was like 2% a year ago at this time. Well, that's a huge shift in buying ability of a first-time homebuyer, let's say. But why is squeezing the labor force and squeezing the consumer, that is somehow the response to inflation? And sure, I get it, we're a consumer-driven economy.
Yeah,
but
certainly.
What you're doing is you're squeezing each and every household. You're saying we're going to make it more expensive for you to borrow, for you to buy, because too much inflation, it's overheated. But you know what a better response might have been? A windfall profits tax. You know what? The elections are over. Gas is under $3 on University Avenue now. How'd that happen? Because they didn't have to throw the summer formula in there anymore? I mean, what changed in the last week and a half where I saw gas go down 40 cents a gallon? Was it the raising interest rates? The Fed's efforts to fight inflation? Because you know what the Fed's been doing? The Fed's been sticking it to the working man and woman of the United States and really trying to make it harder on the labor force, trying to tamp down employers' efforts to hire. That would be a positive result. The fact that we still have an increasing labor force means that Wall Street starts bad days, more higher interest rates. Because if you're borrowing on margin and investing on Wall Street, it's hard to do when interest rates are 6%. They aren't as profitable. Those that don't actually do any work for a living are less profitable. Well, you know, they're the capitalists, Tom. They're the job creators. But if they create too many jobs, then we got to stick it to the American consumer. We, the Fed. I don't see how this Fed effort has been for the benefit of the American consumer. For the vast majority of us, this sticks it to us.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I would suggest certainly there's lots of companies out there that are also engaged in borrowing, right? So it's not just the consumers, but certainly a majority, because of course we are a consumer-driven society. And Wall Street's reaction to the fact that these job numbers are not going down enough, right? That's to increase the interest rates or trying to slow down the economy and hopefully have a soft landing. You don't want to go into a recession, but you know, if you're paying 8% more for a widget this year than you were last year, you know, you can't make it up on volume with an increase of 5% of wages, right? You're still behind the eight ball in that regard, and that's spread across to everybody and everything. Versus when unemployment ticks up, it doesn't impact everybody and impacts those who are actually the unemployed. So, I mean, I get it. It's imperfect. I mean, it's hard to think that, wow, we're going to have a system where we're going to increase these rates, and by necessity to be successful, there are going to be less people working. Another side note, I believe the worker participation rate in this most recent report also went down.
The labor participation rates are going down?
Yes.
Darcy, who is apparently still listening, Tom, informs me rates weren't down at 2% a year ago, maybe 4%, still much lower than the current 6%. The inflation has been caused by a couple of things, right? Gas prices.
Yes.
Well, now gas is settling back down below $3 a gallon. So are we going to see other parts of the economy bring their prices down to reflect the cheapening supply lines? I bet we don't. Know what I mean? I bet we don't. Because once you've creeped someone's prices up, they like to keep them higher. They like to squeeze those margins. They're kind of like when gas comes down, it comes down slow. But when it goes up fast. So my greater point is this, Dom. A couple of things that actually have been spiking the inflation, the massive profits of the petrochemical industries.
Yes.
We didn't tax that. They have these massive windfall profits. They're profiteering on the American people. They're making up rationales to raise the price of gas. Well, we didn't change that. What we did is we squeezed the American people when they try to go borrow for a mortgage. And yeah, maybe some companies are borrowing, but ExxonMobil, I bet they're not borrowing a lot. I bet they're pretty okay with the cash they're sitting on. And the other part, right, the rail system, that's another major driver of the supply lines. And I can understand why the Biden administration doesn't want that to crash and burn for Christmas. Feels like that'd be a bad political move. But from the labor point of view, from the workers' point of view, it's another thing that instead of getting in the column with labor, instead of trying to tamp down the profits, the grandiose profits of the industry that's providing the logistics, the supply chain, the railroad industry, again, government's effort was to tamp down the workers' power. And I'm seeing a pattern. I guess that's my point. That's my grievance.
844-967-2789. Let's get to the phones. Kurt from Madison, you're first. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Kurt.
Hi. You know, from the time I was a young boy, I remember my mom always making the comment when these situations occur with the Democrats, she just would shake her head and they say the Democrats are just so stupid. And, you know, she lived until she was 90. And that her statement never changed, and for good reason. We constantly are caught in Groundhog Day here. So for Biden, someone needs to sit his butt down in front of a computer screen and bring up YouTube and teach him how to watch some of the FDR footages. Because my favorite FDR footage is when he's railing against the oligarchs and he says, I welcome your hatred. So if he wants to be FDR, then he needs to start growing a spine and stop being this slinky all the time. Because I have to agree with the professor. This is damage, more damage when we don't need it. This was all avoidable. But he just, they can't think in front of their own face.
Kurt, I want to keep getting a few more voices in. Thank you for your contribution. 844-967-2789. Ken Bob from Dailyville, what's your grievance?
Hey, Ken Bob.
Well, I don't think I'm actually going to defend the railroads a little bit. It's not a question of providing days off. The average, I did some research today, the average railroad worker starts with 2 week vacation, 10 personal days. And they have a weird thing, a weird scale thing for unplanned absences. And it's a pain, and there's actually both of them, they're working on it, but they don't have a great answer yet. And the big deal is that a railroad runs on a big schedule. You have this giant train full of millions and millions of dollars worth of stuff that is supposed to get someplace at a specific time. And for them to have to say, oh, we can't run this train because engineer A got the coal today, it's a big deal.
Ken Bob, that's why they got the leverage, because it's a really, really big deal when the trains don't run on time or at all. But Ken Bob, you are still my favorite. Ken Bob from Dailyville, come back with us. We are the Devil's Advocates. More of your calls, more of your grievances than our fine guest, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. At the bottom of the hour, the happier, happy hour. It rolls on. More of your calls next.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, I thought we'd normally save the Doobie Brothers for our next fine guest, James Santel, coming very soon, about 5:30. But one quick note. I want to be accurate. Darcy and I, you know, she's texting me interest rates. So I looked it up a year ago. December 1st, let's just say, of 2021, 30-year interest rate, 3.3%, 15-year, about 2.5% a year ago. So the interest rates have nearly doubled in a year. To help lower inflation by squeezing the American consumer, and it's a disappointment if they got a job, as I'm understanding the sequence of recent headlines. Then the markets are depressed if people are continuing to find jobs. That's bad.
Well,
bad for Wall Street.
You know, when you bring it down to the micro level like that, yeah, it sure sounds bad, but these are macro level kind of decisions. And of course there is real pain on the ground when these things happen. There's no question. But this is not new. This is what the Fed has been doing for decades. And I just want to also point out and to our last caller a couple of things. Talking about the benefits and the pay and all those things, you know, regardless of whether or not you think someone's getting paid enough or what their deal is, I think that is ultimately irrelevant to the point that if the workers in a particular industry, in a particular union, believe that they're not getting their due, regardless of whether or not you think it's more or less or not enough or too much, It's up to them to make that determination, right? And if they decide that they want to fight for more, okay, it's up to them to make that determination. And if we're going to talk about how very important these rail lines are they so important to be left in the hands of a very few billionaires who have over the last several decades consolidated this industry and refined it and pinched it and, you know, leveled it down to where now you can't even, you're so tight that you can't give people a 7-day paid sick leave, or you're so greedy. I mean, is it in the American people's best interest to leave it like that? I'm not sure that it is.
They'd have to staff up, Dom, you know, to be able to readily fill vacancies if people needed to go to the doctor, let's say. You'd have to hire a few more people. And that cut right into the bottom line. 844-967-2789. Our pal Jeannie from Eau Claire. Always pleasant to see you on the lines. Jeannie, how are you doing?
Hey, Jeannie.
Hi, guys. Great show as always. And I tell you, this has been just gut-wrenching watching this go on because, well, I had relatives that worked on the railroad. My grandfather did. And I have all union people in my family. I've been a member of unions. And I support them 100%. But they had the president by the kahunas because these multi-billionaires that own everything, that can stop anything, that can impact everybody's lives, even with gas prices. Every single thing impacted by our lives come up from the big guys that also put big bucks into the elections and get their little workers in our Congress and in our Senate. And I really believe that, you know, maybe our president and the offices can start sending OSHA or any workers type safety regulations on these suckers and make them have safety regulations that these people only work so many hours at a time and take care of these workers because they deserve to be safe and healthy and protected just like anybody else, even if they work for billionaires that are just, it's pathetic. It really is. But it's the railroads and it's the billionaires that are causing this disruption. And I'm hoping that they'll do something for these people because this is ridiculous. And it isn't all on our president. It's on those billionaires and it's on those people that are putting the clamps on everything. Women's right to choose, everything. They get their, you know, their laws passed. The state of Wisconsin's run by Uline and the other woman. You know, we gotta really start opening our mouths and have our voices heard, and also call the president and say, we want protections for these railroad people. We want protections for those that work on the railroad. They deserve to be taken care of and not to get sick on the job because you can get all the money in the world, but if you're ill, it's not going to do you any good. So thank you very much, guys.
Jeannie,
it's a sad topic.
Jeannie, let me ask you a quick one. If mm-hmm. not Joe Biden, who is to speak for the American people? I mean, I think it should be Dominic, but if it's not Dominic, it's got to be Joe Biden, doesn't it?
Well, you know, he's caught between a rock and a hard place because guess what? There's other union workers that need those supplies. So definitely it does. I mean, even when I had relatives who worked for the tire company, and they were part of the auto workers, and only one company would go out at a time if it was going to be a strike, and the other ones were working, so the company wouldn't go bankrupt. I mean, it is a situation where everybody's involved, but we, the American people, need to speak out for the real workers and say, give them their time off, and you guys figure out whatever way you're going to do it, but get it done.
Unfortunately, Jeannie, the American people did through our elected representatives, and they voted no. That's the grim reality of it, Jeannie.
We're going to sneak one more in here this segment before our fine guest, Jim Santel, joins us. Dick from Madison. Welcome, Dick. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dick.
Well, real quick, from the beginning of this, I've always referred to this inflation more as price gouging than inflation, and that's pretty provable. But I just was watching something here on TV that comes up again now. Under Joe Biden, job creation, 10.5 million jobs in his first 2 years. In the full 4 years of Trump, 3.9. Now, And I feel bad for the guy because he's between a rock and a hard place with this thing. He's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't with this rail thing. I mean, I honestly think that he wants to do something down the line, and he will. And given time, he will.
Well, heavy is the head that wears the crown, but the time for action was now.
I mean, listen, we're raising rates to try to cool the economy. I mean, Joe Biden, let him blow it up. Let him do $2 billion a day. Let the rails strike. That would impact the economy, right? 844-967-2789. Oh, hell, James Santel. He's coming up next. Stick around.
He says we're going the wrong way.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
It's not personal, sir. It's strictly business.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. We welcome back the godfather of legal advice, at least on this program. He's our good friend, former U.S. Attorney James Santel, the host of Morning Cannolis on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday mornings, and often replayed across the network on Sunday mornings. Jim, welcome back, sir.
Hey, Jim.
Very good to be with you once again on a wonderful Friday afternoon.
It is a wonderful Friday afternoon. I understand the prosecutors in the, criminal case against the Trump Org are wrapping up today by telling them, the jurors, that is, that Trump knew of the Weisselberg tax fraud at the Trump Org.
Right, exactly. That his hands, his signatures are all over these documents, and indeed they are on many of the documents introduced into evidence. Again, the president himself is not on trial in that case. His corporation is. The question is whether or not all of this is sufficient to impute liability then to the corporation. Ellen Weisselberg had testified at the center of this trial, tried to sort of go right down the middle here. The question is whether or not all the things that he admitted doing were done in behalf of the corporation. I think the case is there. The jury is going to be deciding whether or not there's credibility in him. He is plainly doing this pursuant to a plea deal and will be going away to prison for a long period of time, but not as long as it otherwise would be. So we'll wait to see here, but a very compelling closing argument from the prosecution making this case that the corporation is liable for these tax fraud events. And Weisselberg was the principal mechanism, if you will, for doing it. And the president, the former president, knew all about it as well. Doesn't get you anywhere in terms of the verdict, but important fact to know.
Jim, my understanding is the former president's attorneys in this case say it's all that guy's fault, that Weisselberg, he's a greedy bastard. He did it all to enrich himself. Yet the Trumps never actually fired the man. They gave him a raise. And he is still on the Trump payroll, my understanding, through trial.
Yeah, absolutely. He's still there. Apparently, the greatest emotion he got was geographic, that he moved from some floor to a lower floor by one or so. So he needs to take an elevator now to get to the main office now. But again, a significant testimony a while back that he's still on the payroll, still a part of this organization, which, if anything, it tends to suggest once again that he is still acting on behalf of the corporation. Again, another reason for the jury to say, yes, this man is not separate from them. He still is there. He's admitted to doing these off-the-books kinds of things. And therefore, it's appropriate to impute responsibility and liability to the corporation through him. Again, the big question, I think, is, and also what defense counsel is arguing in their closing, is don't believe him in imputing this to the corporation. This was all Weisselberg, just him, and it stopped there. An awful lot of evidence to suggest that the entire corporation, not a big, big entity in terms of people, knew all about this. And so I think the case is there. The juries can sometimes surprise us, but hopefully sometime next week we'll get a verdict.
Jim, if the verdict is guilty, 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 is that a death sentence for this corporation effectively? Won't be able to borrow, et cetera? Literally a death sentence. How does that work? What's the next step if found guilty?
Sure. Again, we know Weisselberg's already been found guilty. He probably will go to prison for a while. You can't imprison a logo for a corporation, and so that's not available to you. But some very serious fines are also imposed, so look forward to that. Again, Donald Trump getting a lot of financial pushback these days, so to
speak. I'm not paying the fines.
There you go. More importantly, that's right. The corporation is then a convicted entity, and it has all kinds of restrictions in terms of borrowing and insurance, all kinds of things, depends upon state law, federal law. But the corporation is now, it's not brought to an end. That's what in many ways the Secretary of State, I'm sorry, the Attorney General of the state of New York is trying to do. But the fact that there is now this huge finding, if indeed the jury returns this verdict, that this entity engaged in a criminal enterprise here, and that the conviction is incorporated in this judgment. Anybody looking at this in terms of lending, of any sort of financial transactions down the road, has got to look at that and say, this is not a group with whom we want to deal.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, our pal, former U.S. attorney, lots of Trump news, or at least news in the Trump orbit these days. I read in the New York Times recently, Jim, that Alvin Bragg, what the Manhattan District Attorney, after the announcement of Jack Smith, the special counsel, to look into these very specific issues of January 6th and the documents, that Alvin Bragg was like apparently pondering bringing back, looking into the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. And I'm just, how is this possible? Now, my understanding, if it says Trump moved out, that somehow the statute of limitations is put on pause, and now Alvin Bragg might come back and look at this, Jim. What's your sense of that angle?
Yeah, my own sense is it seems somewhat messy, right? We're talking about sort of the catch and kill event that we know the Southern District of New York a long time ago, still curious. During the Barr administration, dropped that federal investigation without a whole lot of explanation. And now Alvin Bragg has said, well, maybe we'll come back and revisit that. And so perhaps he's got some theory under New York state law. That's the only thing he can prosecute under that would make that, would regenerate that case. And there may be some derivative things that come out of that, some financial issues that still may be alive. That's significant because it indicates that in the wake of whatever happens here in this criminal trial against the corporation, against Weisselberg, that there is still an open file here. And not only does that matter involving the so-called catch and kill event still have some life in it, perhaps, but the other portion of this is, okay, now that you've gone down this road and you certainly have begun to lead America, if not this specific jury, toward Donald Trump, is Donald Trump's name still on that file? And you do want to revisit some of that and determine whether or not there is still a case to be made. We know early on some of his assistant DAs, when he took office, left because they felt so strongly that the new DA was not pursuing that, not supportive of that. Maybe Bragg is sending some signals that he might be willing to reconsider that, adding yet another thing to the list of Donald Trump's many, 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 many legal problems, both civil and criminal.
Counselor, you have your prep materials. I have my prep materials. I have in my hand here the Stormy Daniels full disclosure. And while I find this fascinating reading, sir, I'm really interested in the much more substantial crimes and the recent conviction of the seditious, conspiratorious Oath Keepers. I knew I kind of said that backwards, Jim, but talk about the Oath Keepers, would you, sir?
Absolutely. This is a huge deal. And again, Stuart Rhodes and one other defendant among the six found guilty of seditious conspiracy. Once again, as we all know, we've talked about it at great length on this wonderful broadcast. It's basically trying to overthrow the government. And although it is very significant, it sends this huge message plainly to the Oath Keepers, other people, that their leader, their guy in charge, who got them there, who did these things on January 6th. He is now going away to jail for a long, long period of time, as are others. A huge deterrent impact upon them and the future of this organization. Note as well that there are at least two more trials involving, one of them involving also the Proud Boys. That one's also coming up sometime soon. Sending these messages that, hey, jury's looking at this information, come to the conclusion not only that there is a conviction here, there should be a conviction here, but what is it for? It's for attempting to overthrow the government, right? And so that's a huge, huge message being sent. Seditious conspiracy, not an easy thing to prove. It's going to have an impact upon those future cases. And more broadly, I think this is what your question gets to, is just this. We've got 12 people now unanimously looked at this information, this very compelling testimony about people who were there to overthrow the government. And they found, in fact, that that was the case. And so to the extent we've got people out there on frankly, inside one party in particular, who are saying, well, this was all just legitimate political discourse. These are tourists, those kinds of things. No, this verdict stands for that proposition. There were people there who were ready to, as Stuart Rhodes himself said, civil war. Come prepared. If Donald Trump doesn't do it, we will. And so it really should push back on the political side of this as well, the larger government side, to establish that juries look at these things. People out there in the community have listened to the testimony. And we were threatened. We were threatened by these people. This was a very significant problem on January 6th before and probably still after.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, the news that keeps coming. ABC News reporting today that Trump White House counsel Pat Cipollone testified before a federal grand jury along with his deputy, Pat Philbin. So this is the J6. This is in front of a federal grand jury. This is not, you know, the J6 committee. What's your sense on here? Now, he was, if I recall specifically, Cipollone was coy, or would not talk about some very specific conversations that he had with the president because of this confidence issue. Attorney-client, right. But now, apparently, the judge has ordered them to testify. Jim, what does that mean to you?
Sure. So again, significant that the federal grand jury, again, you got it just right. This is not the January 6th committee, much related in terms of topics. But these are the people who eventually may be returning an indictment against one or more people for January 6th. We know Pat Cipollone and others testified to some extent in front of the January 6th committee. His appearance there, we don't know exactly what he said today. He can still, invoke various privileges before the grand jury. But the fact that he is testifying and these other major top-level White House staff also appearing there, that's also the big takeaway on this, that Merrick Garland and the assistant U.S. attorneys, main justice who are doing this, are getting very, very close to the president. The office of the legal counsel there at the White House, very close to the president himself, and certainly asking questions about communications, conversations. And so we know that this is moving in a direction that again, Donald Trump should be very concerned about. Cipollone, as you say, has kind of kept counsel on some things, but has also recognized that as an officer of the court and as a lawyer, he has got some obligations to come forward and tell what he knows. That's presumably what he has done, along with these others, including his deputy and Scavino and a fellow named William Russell, Bo Harrison, all these folks in the West Wing a number of years ago.
Jim, when Garland appointed the special counsel Jack Smith, we talked about it, and there was some concern at the time. It's going to take him time to prep up, and you know he apparently got in a bike accident. He's still over in Europe or whatever. What's your sense right now, given what we've seen since his appointment and the reporting of these Trump's inner circle being in front of a federal grand jury? It doesn't seem to me, Jim, like they're missing a beat. What do you think?
No, I think that's right. And I think those of us who raised some concerns about this, we're not so much concerned about that. Jack Smith, outstanding. Obviously, couldn't imagine a better person to place in charge of this, right? In inserting into a two-year investigation, a one-year investigation. He's the right guy. Very, very bright to do this. Brilliant to do it, in fact. Should not inhibit this. We've got a very aggressive 11th Circuit argument just the other day. He also is supervising that. All this full speed ahead. So the timing isn't it. Again, my footnote concern about this is just the language on this. We need to appoint a special counsel. I'll bring Jack Smith in, put him inside the Department of Justice. No need to indicate that you need this arm's length person out there. Department of Justice can do this. This is what people can do. And send the message to the general public that we are not going to be animated by partisan politics or by political things out there. That's what your Department of Justice, now restored under a legitimate attorney general, can do. That's what's only my small concern about this, which I still have, but not affecting the future of this, and certainly not affecting what may come very shortly out of both of these investigations, January 6th and Mar-a-Lago both.
Jim Santel, you're not running off for some cannolis right now, are you?
I am not.
Well, good. We'll keep you around. And I got to point out, you said basically crudy as you framed your question. And the generosity of your spirit, Jim, because I so clearly had not framed a question. I had no question. I just threw some words together and said, what do you think about them? That's not exactly a question, but I do have more questions about Robin Voss and the testimony given to the J6 committee and what you think will be exposed to the public. Come back. James Santel, the host of Morning Cannolis on the Civic Media Network Saturday mornings. But more with the Devil's Advocates next.
What am I doing?
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Sixty % of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, sticking around for the final segment. Thank you for doing so, Jim. I want to throw this one out there. Trump Mar-a-Lago special master struck down by appeals court. Jim, a three-judge panel said his appointee, Judge Eileen Cannon, erred in appointing a special master to review the documents seized by the FBI. What does this mean now, Jim? I mean, you know, Donald Trump has a tradition of trying to muck things up and slow things down. It worked for a little bit. What happens now?
Right. So what it means basically is we spent 4 months as a nation, as a judiciary, doing what we knew from the very start, you know, 4 months ago in early August, was ridiculous, absurd. And thank goodness the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals finally stepped in on this second order and said, knock it off. We're not doing this. This is craziness. My word, not theirs. Although, again, if you have an opinion like this and you're a district court judge and you get this from your bosses, basically, in the circuit court, you're not kicking up your heels around the courthouse this morning. Eileen Cannon should be very, very restricted now, in not only in terms of her future, but should look at this past and say, gosh, I got this incredibly wrong. Language along the way saying, rejecting everything that Donald Trump had said along the way. Again, the language of this order on 21 pages, just very compelling. It is indeed extraordinary for a warrant to be executed at the home of a former president, the Court of Appeals says, but not in a way that affects our legal analysis or otherwise give the judicial license to interfere in an ongoing investigation. Don't ever do this again, basically, they're saying. They say we've got three alternatives. Number one, we can do what we always do, which is let investigations go ahead. You can challenge it after somebody has been charged. Number two, we could create an entire exception for everybody in America who might be subject to a search warrant. Or number three, we could carve out a special exception for former and current presidents. So we're not going to do either one of two and three. We're going to go back to normalcy and restore some sense of justice in South Florida and presumably around the country. A huge defeat again. The sad thing about this, once again, why did we do this at all? We knew from the start this was absurd. I also looked to Judge Deary and think, here's a guy who comes out of retirement, spends his waking hours and probably more doing all this, only be told, sorry, go back and bring it all to an end. Nothing to see here. What a disaster. What a disaster. And Donald Trump, again, a huge hit in terms of his legal positions.
Yeah, but Trump had to pay the special master, didn't he, Jim?
That's true. That is true. Again, more finances, more issues out there. His books are going to be very busy, if indeed there's any money there at all.
Think of how Gableman must have felt. Folks, this is the Devil's Advocates. He's our fine guest, James Santel, our good friend. Jim, got to ask you about Robin Voss, Wisconsin Assembly Speaker. Testified before the J6 committee, my understanding, the very last witness to give testimony before they issue the written report, and it will contain the testimony of Robin Voss in just a couple of weeks, Jim. May not have any legal bearing on Robin Voss's future, but do you think he stuck it to the former president?
You know, it'd be fascinating to see. Not only the substance of this, but also any footnotes that may suggest that along the way. You would like to think that, again, when you testify in front of a House committee, as you well know, You are under oath. And again, what are the privileges that Ross has? Well, it's not executive privilege. It's not attorney-client privilege. He may have a Fifth Amendment privilege that he may want to invoke. But plainly, the committee interested in, as they are in these last days of December before they go out of business, working feverishly to get that report done. So we'll look forward to seeing what he did and did not say. I think you're right. I don't think he provides a huge amount of insight, but we know as well that Wisconsin is one of those states that had the false electors here. We know, in fact, that there have been a lot of communications into Wisconsin because we're one of those swing states. What is Robin Voss? What was his involvement in all of this? What did he say to the committee? Presumably, we'll find out within the course of the next 22, 23, 24 days or so. And we'll look forward to seeing that.
Jim Sintel, you will broadcast tomorrow morning from the WAUK 540 AM studios in Waukesha. The morning cannolis, 9 to 11, tune in across the Civic Media app. But Jim, the Waukesha parade's going off on Sunday. We're going to broadcast it on the network on the WAUK 540. The judge, Jennifer Doro, is using her newfound celebrity to run for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And I strongly suspect the entirety of her campaign is, look at what I did in the Waukesha parade trial. Because that is, I mean, she compared resumes a little bit today with Dan Kelly, but effectively, that is her claim to fame. Jim, as a experienced federal prosecutor, not someone that will have to deal with the state Supreme Court, what's your opinion on her entry to the race?
Right. So we now have four candidates for the position. And again, talk about an important election coming up in February. And then again, in April, we've got the primary and the final election. We're going to make a decision that's again, going to affect a lot in the coming term, not only about voting, but many, many other issues there. Her name recognition has skyrocketed right around the state because of this. And again, that means something to the population. I would always say to those people who look to her and to the other candidates and others who might be out there, let's talk about your entire course of your legal career, not just based upon one admittedly very high profile case. And again, I've always balked at this notion that I'm the judge who sent somebody away to jail for a long period of time, to prison for a long period of time. The language instead has got to be all about accomplishing justice, presiding over this and many other cases that are out there. And so all the judges should be looking to that and focusing on that. The population should be doing the same and determining this not based upon one particular case and their name recognition, but upon a career and a life, and not a lifetime necessarily, but a long-standing career experience that should be in the part of the public record.
Jim Sintel, should the makeup of the Wisconsin Supreme Court flip from, let's say, conservative to liberal, and let's say they believe a case has merit that the gerrymander that happened here in the state of Wisconsin is so god-awfully partisan, it disenfranchises voters and is incongruent with the Wisconsin Constitution. Jim, can you envision a court changing the makeup of the district maps here in the state of Wisconsin? Last minute counselor.
Sure. And if you do, in fact, you obviously can't just reach back and pull out an old file and reverse it. But if there's new litigation, again, premised upon people who've got standing to bring that lawsuit, a new lawsuit could be presented to the court. You need to show your harm under this new regime that was effectively sanctioned by the present Supreme Court. And under those circumstances, yes, you can revisit this. Courts overturn things all the time. And so that would be a possibility, depending again upon the makeup of the court and a new piece of litigation that raises issues about harm being done now. That's the concern. That would be the approach.
James Sintel, host of Morning Cannolis. Tune in tomorrow, 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Network. And don't forget the Waukesha Christmas Parade Sunday, beginning about 3 o'clock. Thank you, Don Brown. Thank you, Dr. Harvey K. Thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Jim.
What would you say you do here?
I plead the fifth.
You don't know what the hell you're doing.
I plead the fifth.